Phil Nason Show. That was Guns N' Roses' Welcome to the Jungle, also known as The Phil Nason Show. It's May 23rd, Thursday afternoon, 2013, and I want to thank you all for taking the time to listen at 5 p.m. Eastern on Max Sports Channels, and again at 10 p.m. Eastern on Talk Superstation, and at various times throughout the day at Independent Radio LA. Welcome. We want to welcome you to the show. We want to thank you for subscribing on iTunes and going to the various websites that affiliate with the Phil Nason Show. It's an honor to be able to bring this show to you each and every day. Later on, Jamie and Smith and I will be talking about Tiger Woods and Sergio Garcia and all that flap. But up first, from PoundingTheRock.com, we're going to be talking Memphis Grizzlies and San Antonio Spurs basketball with Mr. J.R. Wilco. J.R., welcome to the show, man. How are you tonight?
Doing great, Phil. Thanks so much.
Thank you. What's happening with this series? 2-0 already. Game one was kind of like a game I didn't expect score-wise.
Yeah, I can't say that I expected that either. It was pretty crazy, man.
That was nuts.
That was an absolute beatdown and probably the last thing that I could have expected. But I mean, it really looked like San Antonio had all the answers, and Memphis was just struggling to keep up, something that I really did not expect to see from their defense at all.
That was weird, really.
Yeah,
I wonder what happened to the Grizzlies. Is that the real team or what?
You know, I was talking with Kevin Leip. I know you talk with him as well, Grizzly mm-hmm. Bear Blues, and he and I were texting over the entire conversation, you know, surrounding that game one, and something that he said to me kind of stuck out, which is that Lionel Hollins is fine running his straight up regular unadjusted defense. It was the NBA's best defense throughout the regular season, you know, but he's just to trot out their regular defense in game one and see how that goes and then work it from there. I mean, they lost game one in round one to the Clippers, lost game one in round two to the Thunder, and lost game one in the Western Conference Finals to the Spurs. And it just seems like he's comfortable making adjustments from the way that those teams attack his defense, you know, without feeling like he's got to go in there from the get-go. And honestly, that seems to me, I'm not going to say it's arrogant. I just it just smacks of being really confident in your team to say, hey, you know, our flat defense can give us great look at what their plan is for attack, and from there we can go on and beat them. Problem is, game two didn't really give us very much of an answer as to how those adjustments from game one were really going to change things all that much.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, I think a lot of what Lionel Hollins does is really just regurgitated Dr. Jack Ramsey stuff. Because I think Ramsey used to do that stuff too. You know, he believed in his team. Mm-hmm. He put them out there. And he also believed in his own abilities as a coach to break things down. But yeah, I'm not so sure what the difference was, although game two was a lot different score-wise.
Yeah.
But game one, Matt Bonner. You know, Matt Bonner.
I know. Yeah, you know, I've been Matt Bonner is one of those hot topic subjects among Spurs fandom. It's not a black and white deal, and it's not a love him or hate him thing. It's a, you know, even the people who hate him have those moments where they're like, okay, Matt Bonner, 7 threes in a game, go for it. All right, what can you do? And even the people who love him are like, oh, I can't believe. The thing about Matt is that he's a very smart player. You know, he was the valedictorian of his high school class. He's the Players Association vice president, right? I mean, you don't get voted into those positions being a dumb guy. So he's a very smart guy. He knows who he is. He knows what his role is. He knows the Spurs system inside and out. He hardly ever makes any mental errors or misses rotations. His main drawback is just he's not the most athletic guy. You know, can't jump out of the gym, and he's not the fastest. But he works within what he's able to do. I've heard him talk about the NBA scouting report on it. He knows what teams expect from him and what teams know that he can do, and he just works within that while continually making himself a little bit better, a little bit better. I don't scream no anymore when he goes into the lane and shoots that little shy hook of his, which is what we call it. Not the sky hook, of course, a little shy hook, right? But that I don't cringe anymore when that happens, because it's actually pretty deadly now. When he pulls up from 12 feet, I don't mind so much anymore. He never turns the ball over. And the last thing, which is the main thing, is when he's open, he can hit the three. And boy, did he do that in game one.
Yes, he did, didn't he? A lot of people are talking about this fella. And yeah. It's kind of wild that they are, really, to be honest with you. But Tim Duncan, he didn't have the biggest night game one, but he did control the glass, and he had four assists.
Yeah.
This is a big man who can pass. You got to love that.
And it's not just that he's very skilled in so many different ways, but his understanding of what defenses do, what they take away, and what they leave open when they take certain things away. I've seen him spin on a dime, and he's like three quarters of the way through his passing motion before he even sees the guy he's passing to, just because he can tell by seeing, you know, 50, 60, 75% of the floor, he knows what's behind him. I mean, he gets in trouble sometimes too, because, you know, when you assume that much, sometimes it's not exactly what you think behind you. But man, it just the way that he is able to work in the constructs of the system and read those defenses is amazing. And it's not just that he knows where those passes are. He's actually really skilled to get the ball right into guys' hands and to put those passes on a dime at times, which is really cool. But like you said, he controlled the glass, he controlled the defensive end, and really made it to the point where they were able to shut down Zach Randolph the way that they were, which I was blown away by. I mean, the way they fronted him, the way they trapped him before the ball got there, and really kept the ball out of his hands, took Memphis utterly out of what they want to do. It made them completely change their offense for game two.
Absolutely. You know, I was recording my show during Sunday's game, so I saw bits and pieces the next day. And I did see the stat line, honestly. I looked before I started watching the highlights and stuff, and I was blown away, because this reminds me of the Zach Randolph who played for the Knicks, not the one who plays for the Memphis Grizzlies.
Yeah, well, there have been a number of Zach Randolphs over the years. The only good one has been in Memphis, really.
And why do you think that is?
You know, I think there are a number of things. I've read a few articles about him, and I'm by no means a massive student of Zach Randolph. But I think there are times when guys get to a certain part of their point in their life when they're ready to be taught a little bit more. And get in a system that really kind of clicks and connects with who they are. And this is across sport. This is across life, really. But I was talking with somebody about Rich Gannon today, how he was a mediocre quarterback for essentially a good 10 years of his NFL career, just happened to get in with John Gruden and the Raiders at the right moment. And he just lit up the NFL for a good 2-3 years. I mean, this kind of thing happens where somebody just starts to get it. The coach gets it in the same way, and they can really work a lot. You know, a lot of it, I think, is just communication. And when you've got someone who speaks your language, someone that sees things the way that you do, or can break down things in a way that you understand them, then there's the ability for success. And that's the thing. Zach really seems bought in and ready. Well, you know what he looks like? He looks like Carmelo did at the beginning of this year when everyone was talking about how amazing he was. I heard a little bit of you talking about that. I was like, this is exactly what I've been saying all year long when everybody was so high on the Knicks. We'll see if Melo is really changed if he does this all season long. And obviously he didn't. He reverted to hero ball, and you can see what happened. But that this is not something I think that's a flash in the pan with Zach. I mean, obviously it's gone on for years now. It's his third or fourth year, definitely his third year there. And he's in that system. He's a part of that team and also a part of that community. And they've accepted him and he's become kind of their, you know, their little totem, their little touchstone. And, man, I mean, it's really cool to see somebody with that amount of talent put it together, but it's crazy the way that San Antonio completely removed him from that first game.
They hit the delete button on him, that's for sure. But you did, you, oh, you heard of the show where I was talking about Melo. I've been talking about him like that all year.
Man, and it's hilarious because I was just like nodding along furiously with you because it just so much reflected my tune, which was somebody, you know, in the exact same conversation where people were talking about how great. I'm like, look, you need to wait to see if this is, if it really is sunk in or not. And I he still doesn't get it. He still thinks it's more about him than it is about the team. And that's completely not the case with Zach in Memphis.
Absolutely. I affectionately call him me, myself, and Mello.
Oh, man.
And I'm a Knicks fan all my life. So
oh, okay.
I get away with it because the fake Knicks fans don't like me much, but the real ones understand. Anyhow.
Yeah, yep, well, they know the pain.
Yeah, of course. One more thing about game one that I was completely impressed by was Kawhi Leonard. Jeez.
Boy,
7 for 10, right? 4 for 5 from three.
Yeah, and he didn't go crazy on the boards in game one, but man, you were right. He was in such rhythm. He was hitting threes from further out on the corner. It wasn't just corner threes. It was out on the wing and closer to the top than where he normally hits from good percentage. And man, when he is on playing defense like that and rocking those threes, it is. I mean, he's the Spurs' third best scorer right now. He's outscoring everybody but Tim and Tony. And I mean, it's going to be amazing to see what happens once Pop really gets comfortable calling his number in the post on a regular basis, because he's got a real smooth stroke. Anybody who can guard him and it quick enough to guard him is going to get overpowered because I don't know if you've noticed, but he is really thick from in the leg and in the butt. I mean, the guy's got power, you know, like a running back. He's built like a running back from the waist down. And anybody who's strong enough is not going to be quick enough to stay with him. And he just absolutely rules guys in the paint. And his mid-range jumper, it's not Parker-esque at this point, but it is pretty deadly.
Yeah, I had Kawhi on my fantasy team to start the season. And I had to let him go because he got injured and then he had a slow recovery. But it was really nice to see him do those things that he did. Now, game two, the same thing, you know, the same thing, except now we can talk a little bit about Tony Parker.
Right.
This is how good this team is. You know, we didn't even talk about Tony Parker in game one, and he's obviously contributed. But 18 assists, is he crazy?
That's not just a season high. That's not just a postseason high. That is a career high, 18 assists. And, you know, you could say that he was kind of forced into that a little bit because Duncan had to sit for so much, you know, with his foul trouble. I'm not going to talk about those three fouls in 30 seconds and how two of those three were. Anyway, not going to talk about it. But anyway, okay. He got those fouls, however they were called. He got them. And Tony really had to take the offense on. And at that point, I just ran himself ragged for those three quarters, didn't leave anything for the fourth. And that's when the comeback happened. Duncan wasn't, you know, Tony was gassed, and who wouldn't be after that kind of a performance? Duncan was still on the bench again, 'cause they called the fifth on him. And really it was like, no, everyone went cold. Tony couldn't drive anymore. His legs were gone. Everybody was shooting short, and Memphis did just enough to pull even. And then in the overtime period, you know, it really came down to the fact that Duncan was the only fresh person on the floor. He hadn't played, I think, more than like 20 minutes to that point. Memphis was completely exhausted from working their way back into the game, and Duncan's 6 points were enough to win.
Yeah, the difference, and the difference too is Zach Randolph. He's a beast. He played 45 minutes in that second game, and he had 18 rebounds, 15 points. That's a big difference. What do you attribute to that? I think it was the foul trouble with Duncan, right?
Well, they also moved him further out, and they weren't necessarily getting him the ball on the move, which is when a team is trying to take someone away from you, then the best thing you can do is try to get him moving, make the defense react to some other things, and then feed him. I don't know how comfortable he is, doing that kind of thing, but they were definitely moving him around from his normal spots on the floor to get him. Those rebounds that he got, obviously it was an awesome performance anytime that you have that many rebounds, but number of those, especially the offensive rebounds, were empty boards. He got three offensive rebounds in that one sequence at the end of the first half when the Spurs absolutely refused to let the Grizzlies score any of those point blank shots. He got three of them then. Those were empty. There were two more in a different offensive sequence when he shot, missed a shot, got it back, shot, missed a shot again, was fouled, and got 1 point there. So, and then there was another offensive rebound that came to nothing. So, I mean, there were a number of just straight ahead stats that didn't equal any points. So I hate to call them empty boards, but I don't know how else to refer to them. It padded the stat sheet, but it didn't really amount to much when you talk about the scoreboard.
Yeah, that's fair enough, I suppose. Yeah, empty boards. I like that. That's very good. But I tell you what, they had 60. This, and we're moving into game three now. 2-0, crazy stuff. Now you're in Memphis, and it's a tough place to win. But in game two, San Antonio was out rebounded 60-46, I believe. What do you think? Does that concern you going into game three? We're going to get into the other concern in a moment.
I don't mind San Antonio getting out rebounded if they're shooting a high percentage. What I mind is them shooting a low percentage and not making up for it by crashing the boards. And then the second thing is, it's not how many offensive rebounds you give up to the Grizzlies, although that is huge. Don't get me wrong, it's huge, but it's more about the second chance points. And that is really the story of game two. The Grizzlies had a ton of offensive rebounds. I think it was something like 18 or 19, and they had 8 second chance points. That is the story of the game. If they had been more efficient in turning those offensive rebounds into points, then it would have been we'd probably be looking at a 1-1 series right now. So the story of the rebounds, while important, is a part of the story, and a lot of times it pivots around other parts of the game that you wouldn't expect, and it definitely did last night because those second chance points weren't there for Memphis.
Yeah, that's well put. The other thing I like about this series is just it's been clean. I mean, the Spurs had what, 13 turnovers in game two, and Memphis had 10. But one of the things, the byproduct of that lengthy game, Tony Parker needs an MRI on his calf. Do you have any news about that?
Heard that this week. Well, he got kicked in the second game, third game of the Warrior series, and played on it the next day with his calf. Just he said there was a baseball sized bruise. I don't think that's in three dimensions. I think we're talking like diameter there. Bruise on his calf. And then that very next game, he had no lift, and he had just a horrible, horrible game. I believe that was game four. And then the next two games, he looked pretty good. He looked gassed at the end of game six, and then had 2 games off after that series, or had an extra day off, not necessarily 2 full days because they had that 2:30 start on Sunday, but he looked really good and fresh in game one, and I think at this point it's just one of those deals where it's nagging him, and they want to make sure they know what they're dealing with in there. But I don't have any information as far as the results of it at this point.
Okay, well, when we find out, we'll let you all know out there. But in the meantime, what do you think is the key for San Antonio for Game 3?
Refs aside, and the reason I bring that up is because this series is really starting to feel a whole lot to me like the 2005 finals against the Pistons, where the Spurs won games 1 and 2, just blew them out. And then the entire tenor of the series changed when the series shifted to Detroit, and all of the calls were they didn't necessarily go the other way. It was called an entirely different way, and both Wallaces, Ben and Rashid, were allowed to slap Duncan between the wrist and the elbow with impunity. And that was, you know, essentially a tied series at that point. So putting refs aside, I got my little dig in there. Putting refs aside, if we have anything close to an evenly called series in Memphis, then I think the key is going to be continuing to contain Randolph while not allowing any of their outside shooters to get off, because I really think that we're going to see a lot less of Tayshaun Prince, a whole lot less of Tayshaun Prince, some less of Tony Allen, and we're going to see those young guys, Poindexter, et cetera, coming in, and their defense isn't going to be as stout, but they're going to be able to spread the floor a little bit and get some spacing for their big men to move inside. So if you can get those other guys in the game, if Memphis does, which I expect them to, you can get those other guys in the game and make it so that San Antonio has to honor the deep ball, then the issue is, can San Antonio control or just keep Zach and Gasol from just completely dominating in that environment? And I think that's the main thing. Can San Antonio keep Memphis from being real efficient in their offense? Because I don't mind a game where Zach Randolph's shooting 18 times to get 15 points. The problem is when he's getting 20 points and is scoring 28 and or when he's getting 20 shots and he's putting up 28 and 30 points. So if they're efficient in their offense from their bigs because of being able to spread the floor, then that's going to mean that we might be looking at a long series. If they can't do that, then it could be a real short series. It could be 4 or 5 games, but it all depends on game 3. Obviously, if the Spurs take game 3, the series is over 4 or 5 games easy.
That's a great answer. Great stuff. Thank you so much, JR, for being a part of the show tonight.
You bet. I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. That was JR Wilco, and you can find him at poundingtherock.com. Coming up next, Jamie Smith and I will be talking Tiger Woods, Sergio Garcia, and of course, his beloved Atlanta Braves. And we'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen,
tonight we come together.
Cool. And I think it's cool.
Somebody's going to be having fun tonight.
All I want to do is go have a good time.
It's all about tonight.
Bill Nason.
Some of the things that these people say.
Jimmy Z.
That is such twisted logic.
Alex Jones.
You heard it here first. Now it's mainstream news.
Weeknights starting at 10 Eastern.
Okay, well, let's go party.
Yeah, tomorrow can wait till tomorrow.
Ah, it's a lot of fun.
I said tomorrow can wait till tomorrow. It's all about tonight.
And we'll have fun, I promise.
Yeah, it's all about tonight.
Weeknights on the Talk Superstation.
It's all about tonight.
If you're moving to the Atlanta area or simply looking to buy that new dream home, we'll look no further than to real estate agent Latricia Friesen. Latricia has over 10 years in real estate experience, and she's anxious to put you in your brand new home. For more information, you can contact Latricia at latricia.com. That's LETRISSA.com. This Week in Tennis is a weekly tennis program covering all aspects of professional tennis. The most controversial tennis show anywhere deals with issues no one seems to want to touch.
For music and hard-hitting commentary, please visit philnasons.com.
Are you tired of boring sports websites that spout the same old company line? If you are, then I'd invite you to stop over to thesportsgoons.com. The Reggie commentary and a weekly podcast highlighting today's issues is second to none. That's thesportsgoons.com. The new media has arrived. Looking for the latest information on your favorite sports team? Why not check out 15-year-old founder Trevor Urenz, ProSportsExtra.com. Updated daily by a staff of over 30 writers, ProSportsExtra.com is the place to be. You can check them out, and I insist that you do, at ProSportsExtra.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from The Phil Nason Show and This Week in Tennis. When I'm looking for sports information, my first stop, as well as yours should be, sports-kings.com. Great information, scores, highlights, and exceptional commentary. You can find it all there at sports-kings.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. It is Thursday afternoon, May the 23rd, 2013, and on the line from thesportsgoons.com. Please welcome Mr. Jamie Smith. Jamie, what's up, man? How are you?
Hey, man, what's going on, Phil? Glad to be here today. Having fun, man. Just doing a lot of things. Been doing a lot of ripping and running, getting things ready for grad school. If I'm a college student now, you know, so just getting things in order.
That a boy. And you got the radio show. How'd that go?
Oh, that went well. That went perfect. I had a lot of fun doing the show with Phil. Hopefully next week, do the same thing. Have a lot of fun. It was the first ever Sports Goon podcast, and got a lot of good positive feedback from
it. We did, yeah. I enjoyed it, and I guess I'll be the guest after we finish recording this.
Yeah.
And what I'm probably going to do, because the show is dark on Monday and Tuesday because I got this golf tournament I have to play, and I have no time to be prepared for things, and it's the Memorial Day holiday. With your permission, I'm going to drop that show in the best of Phil Nason's and play it on the radio for you.
Hey. Fine by me, sir.
Are you sure?
I'm positive. That was a good show.
Well, we know this show coming up.
Oh, yeah. Well, this show is going to be great.
We hope so. You don't know yet.
I'm claiming it.
You claim it. You name it. You claim it. You see it and you visualize it and it is all good.
Yes, sir.
I like that. That's a great attitude to have. I'll tell you what. I'll tell you the guy who named and claimed a lot of things that probably didn't happen well for him was Sergio Garcia. I still remember in 1999, he was playing in the PGA. If you remember the big thing where he hit a ball up from way down under and he's running down the fairway watching it. It was the one where Adidas dropped the ball, could have made a lot of money off an ad off that. Dropped the ball, but then really, who the hell was he? He's a 17-year-old kid. But what I remember most about that golf tournament was when he holed out a putt on the 17th hole. And Tiger was playing in the group behind him, and he turned around and he pointed at Tiger. "I'm calling you out," or something like that. And he's been doing it ever since. And now this guy, I'll tell you what, this is one of the longest running, most silliest feuds I've ever seen. This is what he said the other day. He says a lot of things, you know, and we're going to have some fun with dear Sergio, but he's talking about Tiger Woods. He says, "He called me a whiner." That's probably right. It's also probably the first thing he's told you guys that's true in 15 years. I know what he's like. You guys are just finding out. What do you think about this feud?
A wise man in the streets once said, if you're going to have beef with somebody, make sure you back it up. Okay, Sergio Garcia is sort of like, how am I? The little dog picking at the big dog. Like, what are you going to do? Like, be quiet. He hasn't won anything. He hasn't done anything. Tiger Woods has been off for the last 3 years, really, with his golf game. He's coming back the last couple of years. But ever since that case with him and that divorce, whatever, he came back struggling. Sergio Garcia had a chance to take the reins over golf and all that. But he continues to choke in these big tournaments, including the Players Championship a couple of weeks ago when he choked. He could have won. It's like you talk all this trash about Tiger and do all these crazy things about Tiger. Then when push comes to shove, when it times to back it up, he falls short every time. It's like, shut up. And he just takes these little jabs and take these little cheap shots at Tiger. Why? Why do you hate this man? And the latest thing, which really pushed me up top, I'm so done with Sergio Garcia. I hope he never wins a title of anything. Yeah, I hope he just become a straight up loser, more bigger than a loser than he is right now. I don't know if you heard the racial slur that he used against Tiger Woods at the English press conference.
Yeah, of course I did.
Yeah, man. Who does this guy think he is? Why does Tiger Woods keep coming up with this guy? You don't hear Tiger Woods going around, parading around, talking about Sergio Garcia because he's better than Sergio Garcia. And he could care less about Sergio Garcia. The only reason Tiger Woods would even bring up Sergio Garcia is somebody brings it to his attention. But this guy is classless. He's a clown. He just needs to go away. Go away, Sergio Garcia, please. The racial slur, the fried chicken tidbit thing he said, that was the last strike. Get him out of here. I could care less if he ever golf again.
You know, that whole fried chicken thing was interesting because Fuzzy Zeller did that a long time ago. And actually, Fuzzy's from the South, and he was actually trying to make a joke. And Tiger got it. But Fuzzy Zeller got hammered, lost all his sponsors, got a lot of heat for it. And he did feel bad because it was just a tongue-in-cheek thing. You know, this is a guy who grew up with black people. It's just one of those things. It was stupid, and he paid a price. Sergio Garcia loses nothing when he says it. The thing is, Sergio just is stupid. And he doesn't even, I don't even think he's smart enough to realize what he said. Honestly, if it was a dig, it was a weak one. Fuzzy Zeller's was a lot better, and Fuzzy didn't even mean it. I mean, seriously, I know that was offensive, and he knew that too, but not when he said it. It was just a joke. Because Fuzzy's one of the classier guys in golf, honestly. I've met him many times, and he felt bad about it, still does to this day. He said, how stupid am I? It was just a crack. It was funny. Tiger laughed for days over it because Tiger doesn't care. That's what, if you remember, right after, Tiger said, I don't identify with black people. Uh-huh. I'm not black. I'm unicolor. Like, Ablation. Whatever. He's whatever he is. You know, he ain't no prize either now. Uh-huh. Would you want Tiger Woods dating your sister?
No. But that's a different story. A different topic. No, Tiger's not perfect. No, Tiger is not perfect at all. I'm not even going to even praise Tiger in that light. We're just talking about this Sergio Garcia and this Tiger Woods situation and just how ridiculous, like you said earlier, it has gotten. It has gotten to the point where this, the level that Sergio Garcia, why is he talking about Tiger Woods? He's in England for some type of tournament or whatever was going on. He's still bringing up Tiger Woods. Let it go, man. You had your chance to beat him. All he got to do is beat him. That's all he got to do. If he's angry at this guy, he has this such animosity towards him, all he has to do is win. Not hit it in the water, not hit it in the drink and get a double bogey on two different holes on the final round of the Players' Championship. That is not what champions do. Champions go out there and show that they are the best there is, and they go out there and prove it. Sergio Garcia has not done it, so he takes the little kid way out and just throw all these cheap jabs. I know Tiger, he's a butthole at times. He's not the best guy to get along with. He's not the most professional person, as we all know. But give me a break when it comes to him and Sergio Garcia. It's like, what do you want from Tiger Woods? If you can't beat him, shut up. That's where I'm at right now with this. If you cannot beat him, Shut up. Seriously.
Well, that's just it. But here's the thing. This is what he said, too. He says, he, meaning Tiger, can and will beat me a lot of times, but he is not going to step on me. I'm not afraid of him. No, you're right. He is not going to step on you, Mr. Garcia. He steps over you every week that you play against him because he kicks your ass every week. I mean, this is a guy who, you know something? This is what happens, though. When these guys are like little terriers and they nip at your heels and they nip, nip, nip. And the reason, because if he's talking about Tiger, they'll be talking about him. You see, that's where he's at with his career. His career, he's made millions, by the way. Millions for being mediocre.
Yeah, he got a TaylorMade contract, Adidas contract. He got contracts. He got endorsements.
And lots.
Yeah, he got plenty of money. So I'm sure that's not the problem. He's just a mediocre golf player. That's basically what you described it perfectly. He's a mediocre golf player. He just keep nipping at the bit, hoping to catch, get some Tiger rub off, Tiger run. Hopefully it's some spotlight to be on him. But he continues to fail and show up and come up short at the big times and the big moments of these golf tournaments.
Yeah, that's just it. That's what he is.
He's an idiot.
There you go. I completely agree. But then, you know, he even goes on to say, Tiger Woods means nothing to me, and I'm sure I mean nothing to him. Well, then why do you keep talking about him? If you mean nothing to someone, why do you keep doing it? Why even bring his name up? Because that's how he gets his press in his pub. Now, he's not a mediocre golfer. He's a mediocre competitor.
There we go.
He's a fantastic golfer, obviously. He beat me. I mean, I could beat him too. Maybe I should go up in him now. And he can talk to me about fried chicken because I like fried chicken too. And I like black people. And I like lots of black folk.
And it's funny that you say that that Tiger would step over him and he don't want to talk. Sergio Garcia steps on his own foot. That's part of the problem. He's in his own way. Golf is a mental one-man game. He's the worst at it. So, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, poor Sergio is running out of feet to shoot. Seriously. Good thing Adidas sponsors him for his shoes. Because I'm sure he's got several of them with holes in them.
Yeah.
What an idiot. But this is how it is in golf, I guess. You know, golf, do you remember the Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods stuff? It never got that ugly.
No, it didn't. Because they're both classy gentlemen. They both got it was a rivalry, but they had respect for each other. Garcia has no respect for Tiger Woods. Mickelson and Tiger, they were rivals, but Mickelson also won. He got him a couple of majors. He finally got over that hump. It was a point in time where we could see when will Phil get over the hump? When will he win that major? He finally won that major, and Tiger respected him for that. You know, they got mutual respect for each other. They're not going to go in the media and blast each other and take cheap shots and racial slurs and doing crazy stuff like that. I enjoyed the Phil and Tiger rivalry. I don't know why it fell off all of a sudden. Maybe Phil can pick it back up or something. But this Sergio Garcia, man, good gracious.
I think it has more to do with Tiger picking it up. Tiger wins the smaller tournaments, but he's never going to win another major. Those days are behind him. You know, one of the things that I've learned from people who play the game, is that they're not afraid of him anymore. He used to be intimidating, if you remember. That red shirt, that focus, that hat tucked, curved. Uh-huh. He was solid as Sears, and he was untouchable, the classiest guy on the golf course, they said. And of course, he was not very nice to his competitors, but then why should he be? It's not a popularity contest. They don't have to like each other, and they usually don't. They're all going after the same thing. You know, it's like two guys in a bar. And there's one hot chick. Now, we might be boys, but we're both going to try to get over. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing on a golf course or a tennis court or whatever. But Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods, that's not a rivalry anymore. There isn't really a rivalry. They're trying to stir one up over there between Rory McIlroy, the kid from Northern Ireland, and Tiger, but that ain't going to happen either.
No.
Because Rory's not... he doesn't have the personality for a rivalry like that.
What about Luke Scott?
Okay, there you go. That could happen. But I think what it'll be, it'll probably be the Donald guy and probably Scott going at it a little bit, I think. But like I said, this whole Sergio Garcia thing, what kind of stupid fool is this kid? You know, you know, he struts around like he's done something. Now, he won golf's fifth major, granted, good for him. The PGA mm-hmm. Championships, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's great. God bless him. He wins a lot in Europe because he's comfortable over there and people adore him and they worship him. But when he comes to America, they just like, well, what are you going to do next? Are you ever going to break the top 10? Are you ever going to back up your smack talk? And the answer is no, never, not a zip. That young fellow wins if he wins a major in golf, I'll try to bring him on the show and I'll apologize to him and I'll bow down to him. How's that, Jay?
Good. And it's funny that this just popped in my mind when at the Players Championship, where it really got started, when Garcia said that Tiger Woods purposely pulled a club out of his bag when he was hitting, and that distracted him. And Tiger said no, he didn't. The people said they gave him the go ahead to do it. I'm just like, really? Is this all you got? Blank. So what? He took a club out of his bag. If he did or didn't, when you shot it, you stuck it up anyway. What was Tiger Woods getting a club out of his bag got to do with you hitting it in the drink every other hole? So.
Well, what happened is the gallery started clapping because he was ready to hit and cheering him on, and I guess it distracted him. He has a point. And you know what? There's conflicting stories about how that really went down. But the truth is, if Tiger gamed him and got away with it, so what? If that is enough to throw you off, back off the ball. It's that simple. I mean, learn to shut people out. Concentrate. Focus. That's why he hasn't ever won a major. Doesn't matter what the gallery does. It's all inside his head. When he sets up to the ball, you can hear the rattling going on in his head. Mm-hmm. You know, those two peas banging around inside going, well, should I hit it harder or should I put a loft on this? And you can see it. It's just horrendous. No, I'm not a fan of Sergio Garcia. I think he is what he is. He's a choker. He's been one in his entire career, and he will continue to be one. And rather than just accepting his fate, taking his millions, and continuing on in his futile world of fugaziness on a golf course, he'd rather nip at Tiger's heels and pick on a guy. Kick the guy who's already down. Tiger's already lost his reputation. He ain't going to get that back. Why even got to talk about him? Big deal. Stop talking, Sergio, and start hitting the ball. And then, like I said, you win a major, sweetheart, you can come on my show. Until then, zip it. Leave Tiger alone. Tiger's got enough problems. Trust me. Anyway, one team that does not have problems and they're pulling away again. Washington tried to catch him, Jay.
Yeah.
And then the lads came back and started firing away.
Yep.
What's up with your Atlanta Braves?
Oh, man. I mean, 6-game winning streak. Just swept the Twins today. Things are good. Swept the Dodgers over the weekend. Even though the Dodgers and the Twins are struggling. But still, there's nothing like some good old-fashioned home chicken noodle soup to remedy all our problems. They were struggling on the road, on that road trip against Arizona. They were struggling and scuffling. San Francisco took them to the woodshed. But they got home. They got their bearings right. They took care of business against the Dodgers, took care of business against the Minnesota Twins. And they played your New York Mets this weekend, which I'm looking forward to watch. No matter what the records are, you throw the records out the window, they are rivals. And I'm going to watch every game intentionally. But yeah, I've done a great job pitching has come back. Okay. Teheran, Mahalam pitched well today. Tim Hudson, these guys, they were getting hit on the road, but came home in the homestand. They pitched well. The guy getting Medlin going. He's still stuck on one win, though. He has a low ERA, just some bad luck happening. And the bats came back alive. Evan Gattis, man, good gracious, hit a grand slam today. I mean, he hit a 2-run homer the other night to take the lead for the Braves. I mean, the kid, you got Freddie Gonzalez have a good problem to have. You got guys who are hidden, and they got to find somewhere to go. Now, once you get B.J. Upton going and Dan Ugler going, this is a pretty good lineup. Plus the bench, man, you got Ramiro Pena. He's Martin Prado 2.0. He hit a home run today. He's been playing well. Jordan Schaefer has been playing great off the bench. Then we talk about Chris Johnson and Juan Francisco platooning at third base has played well. I mean, then you got Brian McCann coming off injury. He's hit four home runs. So a lot of good things are happening, but I think that one of those players, I don't know, look at the trade deadline. We'll reach that, cross the bridge when we get to it for pitching help. But right now, I'm loving what they're doing. We'll see what happens against the New York Mets.
I don't want to watch that series. I'm not going to. I'm playing a golf tournament this weekend, so I don't have time for that. But and thank God, because Matt Harvey's not pitching, so what's the point of watching them?
Yeah.
We'll talk about the Mets tomorrow night, folks. Believe me. 15 minutes of misery. But you'll enjoy it because we'll be humorous when we laugh at Ike Davis.
Oh, is he going back to the minor leagues?
Well, he's going to be there through the weekend. Oh. They ought to send him to Siberia and leave him there. He's awful. We'll talk about, like I said, we'll talk about him tomorrow night. But Brian McCann, he's just ruthless. Hmm. You know, that's the thing. This team is loaded for real. Yeah. And Evan Gattis has stepped into a great situation. Because, you know something, if they're looking for pitching and they want to get rid of someone, this is a kid they can get rid of and get something quality for if he can continue. Or Chris Johnson or Juan Francisco. One of those three are probably going to say sayonara to the Atlanta Braves. If not, keeping Evan Gattis and trading Brian McCann. Because we all know Brian McCann is probably not going to re-sign with the Braves. I think his catching days are slowly coming to an end.
Yes.
Although he has done well. I mean, still, they've got a really good team. The Braves are something else. I would love to see Andrelton Simmons get a little more consistent at the plate because I have him on one of my fantasy teams.
Yeah.
But sometimes he comes through, right?
Yeah, man. Simmons had a pretty good homestand. He'll come through in the clutch. What Simmons' problem is, like you say, about the consistency part, that he'll be hot for a minute. Then when he get cold, he get ice cold. Then he'll warm it back up. But the thing about Simmons, his glove is great, second to none. Perhaps the best defensive shortstop in the National League. Jesse got to bring his bat around. But he got, almost 20 RBIs, man. He bring home clutch hitters. He gets clutch runs. He get clutch RBIs. He get timely hits. That's the thing with Simmons. When you think he's going to strike out and think he's going to pop out or something, he'll get a double, he'll get a single, he'll rip it, he'll get a home run, and he gets on base. That's another good thing. But his batting average, .241 right now. We need to get that up in the .270s, .280s. And he's become a pretty good leadoff hitter and replacing B.J. Upton in the leadoff spot.
BJ struggling, and I think it's more to do with the fact that he changed leagues.
Mm-hmm.
He's watching his brother get off like a racehorse.
Yep.
And I think that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
I really do.
Switching leagues, coming from the Devil Rays. You're right, switching new pitchers, new ballparks, new everything. I think it's a lot going on mental. You just got to get the mental part of it. He hit a home run today. When he actually connects, he does pretty good. I mean, we actually connect, but the problem is he strikes out so much. I mean, some of these pitches are not even close. I mean, he swings and misses at bad pitches. He's impatient. He's trying to get out of this slump so bad without letting it come to him. Jason Hayward, on the other hand, he was slumping before he got injured. He's come back. He's hit pretty well. He's done pretty well. He's letting the game come to him and taking what the pitchers are giving him. Well, Upton, on the other hand, is still forcing the issue some. Today, I saw some good signs. He had a good swing. He had a nice swing. He just got to connect. And when he connects, he does great things. So he just got to be calm, be focused, get mentally ready, and it's going to turn around for him. I mean, he's just too good of a ball player for him to be hitting still in the 140s and 150s for the whole season. Otherwise, something is really wrong, and Frank Ring will have a little problem on his hand. But I think he's going to get it together before the All-Star break, really, because he's starting to turn the corner a little bit now. Let's see what's happening when they play New York.
Yeah, we'll see. So far, so good, though, with the Braves, AJ.
Yeah, man, so far, so good. We got every team. It's 162-game season. You're going to have winning streaks. You're going to have losing streaks. We got a little cold. Guys with injured, guys not hitting, guys not pitching, whatever. But they got together at the right time. And the best part about it is the rest of the division stinks. and the Washington Nationals just got swept. Who they play? The San Francisco Giants. They just got they're on the West Coast right now. We just got finished with the West Coast. We got hammered. Now it's their time to go to the West Coast, and they're getting hammered. So right now they are 4.5 games back, I believe, of the Atlanta Braves. So we take care of business this weekend, and the other teams continue to take care of business against the NL East. We still be at first for a long time.
Absolutely. Great stuff tonight, Jamie. Thanks for being a part of it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
You can find Jamie over at thesportsgoons.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to thank my guest, J.R. Wilco from poundintherock.com, giving us the Spurs Grizzlies lowdown, and Jamie and Smith for always being here every week. Coming up tomorrow night, we're doing Dodgers, Oakland A's, and New York Mets baseball. Until then, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly, thanks for listening. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.